Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 45, Gary Baird. Gary is a part-time Amazon seller with full-time numbers, though. I'm here to tell you, he's doing really a great job. He is a teacher, and we spent quite a bit of time in this segment talking about his teaching. He's an English teacher. And, you know, what's interesting, I get interested by this stuff. We started talking about entrepreneurship and his ability to teach the kids and how that probably is going to be one of the bigger waves of the future. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight we're going to school. We're going to be taught. The professor is in the house. He is a professor, but he's also a high school teacher. I love the idea that he can teach high school and college at the same time. I think that's just so cool. I think that's so smart. And for the right kids, it really benefits them. Welcome, Gary Baird. Welcome, Gary.
Hey, thanks, Stephen. Good to be here.
So what's a teacher doing selling e-commerce specifically on Amazon? I mean, shouldn't you be training people to do that only? I mean, is that what your skill set is?
Yeah, we do that too. We do coaching, but I've always had an entrepreneurial drive. When I was in college, I bought the Carlton Sheets No Money Down program. Even back then, I was, you know, and we actually did do some investing in real estate for 3 or 4 years in the 90s, and we'll probably get into it again once I stop teaching here shortly after this year. But I've always dabbled in Amazon and eBay, you know, since it kind of since its inception, you know, selling my old textbooks, selling, you know, English books since I'm an English teacher. And that was just something that I always was interested in. And when I came across a free ebook about selling penny books on Amazon, when you could still sell the penny books and make money. And it was actually a time in my teaching career when I had been moved from the teaching position to a remediation position, which was a position I took by choice to work with kids who were really struggling, mainly freshmen who were transitioning and having a hard time. We work in a high poverty school, and I was really challenged and really engaged with that. And it kind of, you know, was completely fulfilling. And when they moved me back into the English classroom, it was kind of like that. The challenge was almost gone, and I needed something else to fill that void. I was spending a lot of time, you know, with learning the new concepts in that new position. And I just didn't have that anymore. So I grabbed that book about a month after I started teaching that year, when they moved me back into the classroom. And we had about $400 in textbooks that I had gotten at a conference, and we started that, and it just took off. And, you know, we did $10,000 our first full month in October, and then I just kind of went to 20 in November and 40 that December, and we were off and running.
Were your parents entrepreneurs, grandparents? I mean, was there something that caught you other than a late night infomercial that might just talk about your studying habits if you're staying up really late to see those commercials, I might just say?
No, you know what? My grandfather, who had passed away before I was even born, owned his own moving company. But my parents were, my mom was an office manager, secretary. My dad worked in a leather mill. And, you know, there was zero entrepreneurial business owners in my family that I knew and had influencing me. So it was just, even growing up, you know, I was happy that snow days happened, not because we got a day off of school, because I could go make money shoveling walks. So I was always, it was always there for me, I guess.
Okay. So you just had that edge about you, that was something. Now, you're a pretty big guy. How is that, you know, I mean, you're what, six?
6 foot.
Okay. Well, you're a big man.
Yeah.
And you are teaching English in a inner city school?
No, we're a country school.
Okay, country school, but a poor area. Right. Okay. I mean, it's got to be pretty assuming for these kids. I mean, how do they react when you walk into a room? You know, I mean, it quiets down pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, when I taught freshmen, it was, they all told me about halfway through the year, the next year when they were sophomores, that they were scared to death of me when they walked in at first. But if you guys know, anybody who knows me knows that there's nothing to be afraid of, but I use that to my advantage, definitely.
Yeah. As a teacher. Well, you know, it's interesting. Do you get a chance to talk to the kids about entrepreneurism at all?
We do all the time. In fact,
great. Let's talk about that. Yeah. Then. Tell me about that.
We talk about it every chance we get. They know, you know, first day of school, I take the opportunity to get to know them instead of doing the read the rules and go over the syllabus and everything like every other teacher does and bore them to death. We hand out candy and just learn about them. They just kind of share a little bit about what their interests are and stuff. So I can kind of learn, you know, how to maybe incorporate some stuff in the lessons during the year that for things that they would like, be interested in to engage them a little bit more. And I share a little bit about myself. So, you know, part of that, obviously a major part of my life is selling on Amazon. So we start off the year and they know about it. And some of them already know about it because they're older brothers or sisters. Some of the kids who've graduated have actually helped shop for me. They've been runners for me in the past. And so they have shared that with their siblings. So they know that coming in. But we talk about during their career research paper that they have to do as seniors. We talk about that all the time. I bring up articles and we talk about different business models that they could take advantage of. We talk about Udemy and all the different courses that are available for them on there and all the different options they have that are different from the traditional college route because that's pushed so heavily on kids nowadays. And it's just so not the only route for them to take. And I have four or five kids, you know, every year who have kind of a spark in them where you can see that they want to, you know, at least think it about it and explore running their own business or, you know, talk about, you know, doing something on the internet. And I just had a kid come and talk to me today about it. He started a channel. He plays video games. And I guess there's a channel out there that he found where you can get subscribers and they get a penny per subscriber. And his goal is to get 1 million subscribers, which would equate to 10 grand a month for him. So he was talking to me about that. So we do talk about that quite a bit. And in the second semester, we do a lot of nonfiction reading, and I try to build in some of the nonfiction reading. I try to build in a lot of the entrepreneurial type reading. We talk about a lot of financial stuff, investing, and, you know, things like that. So the kids have some practical real life lessons taught to them. We can do that and still stay within the English standards for the state of Indiana and not get in trouble.
That's very rewarding, though. That has to be, because as you say, there are a lot of other options, you know, to get an education, right? I mean, sure. There's just so many other ways to learn. And you said there have been some sparks. I was hoping to hear about a couple of those sparks. Has anybody, other than this young man, has anybody taken up and started have they talked about Retail Arb or any of that kind of thing on their own? Or anybody that you brought in to do some sourcing for you, have they been able to go out on their own and start doing it themselves?
You know, I don't know of any kids who have actually gone out and done the Retail Arb. Part of it for them, some
money.
Of them have expressed
sure it's money.
Money and the bank account and having their own because they have to sign up with a bank account with Amazon. Some of them have signed up for merch when that was wide open a few weeks ago. I was talking to them about that, and I had probably 20 or 30 kids sign up for a merch.
Oh, that's cool.
And our plan is to at some point during the year have a little contest, you know, with their design skills and see who can design and sell the most shirts. So, but yeah, that's some of the stuff that we do is a little bit different than the traditional English class.
That's got to be very rewarding, and I applaud you for doing it and doing it, you know, for a long time, right? I mean, you could have stopped quite a long time ago if you chose to, and so I'm sure it's going to tug on your heart. It's got to.
It's something that I plan on doing. It's actually one of my goals is to continue to teach after this year. I'm going to resign, and one of the goals is to, in our local schools, we're not that far from Indianapolis, I'd like to start some kind of an entrepreneurial program where I can go into schools and work with kids and just do it on a volunteer basis, you know, not full time, but not do it just to teach for the money, but to do it for the spreading of entrepreneurial spirit and, you know, to spread the
these kids. It sounds like these kids don't have the opportunity, right? So if you can break them out of that mindset of I work at one of our community food pantries and I do the financial checking right. behind the scenes, right? So you get to see all the stuff, and it's, you know, it's pretty awful, some of the sure. things. The cool thing is you get to coach a little bit, you know, when they, you know, a couple of people have a $300 electric bill. I'm like, there's something wrong. There's no way you right. can have a $300 electric bill. Oh, and then, you know, and it's like, okay, let's talk about a budget. Here's a budget. Let me show you how to do that. Anyway, but I've seen three generations there, Gary, and that just breaks your sure. heart. And I don't fault them because that's what they know, right? I mean, that is ultimately what they know. And so if you can break that by exposing them to other things, I just think it's wonderful. Right. And I think it's just so neat to see that work its way into our educational system, because it would be a much different outcome if this became the mainstream to say, you know, Gary, I'm not that book smart, you know what I mean? But I've got a gift of gab. I could sell anything, you know, and I can work on training or the computer world or the auto mechanic. Remember back in the day, at least in my age, going to a vocational technical school was usually the bad kids.
Right, right.
You know, and that's just crazy because plumbers make more money than most than a lot of lawyers.
I tell my kids that all the time. Those blue collar jobs, in addition to, you know, whether you're doing it for yourself or, you know, as your own, you know, company or doing it for somebody else, those jobs pay well and they're in demand if you're good at what you do. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned the somebody who can sell to anybody. I've got one of the kids who is interested in. And you can see that spark. He hates school. He is just not, he's just your typical entrepreneur who is not, you know, not into school too much. And he is completely focused on what he likes to do and wants to do it. But he told me that, you know, I said, what do you like to do? And he said, I like to sell stuff. He said, I can convince anybody to buy anything. I love to talk to people. And I said, if you can sell stuff, you can control your destiny. And so we're working with him to get him in a direction. Right now he's going through an apprenticeship to be an electrician, but I mean, he's got a ton more potential than that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously that'll be a good job for him, but if he wants to go beyond that and run his own business, that'll be an opportunity that, you know, he wouldn't have even known about had I not brought this up.
And, you know, think about it. You sell yourself in the electrical world too. I mean, you really do sure. in today's day and age, because the only differentiator is price or service. Well, service stinks from almost everybody, right? So, you know, so price becomes an issue. And really, I would pay more of a premium if I could rely on somebody. And so if somebody can convince me, you know, against hence sales, I think they could do better. So sure. Very interesting. I think it's very neat. I now I'm interested to know. And if this is an uncomfortable question for you, that's okay. You don't have to answer it. But what's your why? Why are you leaving it? Something that you clearly are passionate. I mean, are you burnt out from it? Or is there a why for the entrepreneur side that you just need to fulfill more of?
Yeah, you know, it's something I struggle with, actually, because it's a job I took. It's a job I trained for and chose because I loved working with kids and because I love helping kids. So it's something I struggled with. And I think what it comes down to for me is I've always had the entrepreneurial drive, and I've always done things in addition to teaching. And it got to the point where I knew I needed to devote all of my attention to one or the other. And I still love the kids and I still love interacting with them. But when I'm really engaged with them is when I'm talking about this kind of stuff. When I'm talking about English, I'm doing my job. I do it well, but I'm not passionate. And it's just, I just have done it. I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier with, you know, not having that challenge anymore. I've taught at every level. I've taught the low level. I've taught the highest level. I teach the college and the high school classes. And I've taught the lowest remediation groups. So it's just not, it's that challenge isn't there anymore for me. Plus all the political nonsense that has been going on lately with charter schools. And I know everybody's got their own positions and their own views of charter schools. And some of them can be really good. But in our state, at least, they've been shoved down our throats and they have not been done well at all. They've been, in fact, the guy who was in charge of making that decision. His wife ran the charter school foundation.
I'm sure she was the best choice, though, Gary. You don't understand. There was nobody else, really. There's nobody else prepared for it. She really did. I mean, we're not doing it for the money, of course.
Of course.
Nothing to do with that.
So,
you know, it's I would say this. I don't know of an industry out there today that same stuff doesn't go on in. And,
sure.
You know, I'm in an industry. I still have a full-time job, too, and I love it. But the industry, you know, just, you know, we do some pretty stupid things. And then my son's a chemical engineer, and his industry, they do some pretty stupid things. I look at the retailers, and they do some pretty stupid things. So I think that as a business world, it's become, I mean, almost like crazy in some ways. The PC stuff, the politically correct, starting to control things that really have nothing to do with the job, or you know, it just gets weirder and weirder every year I've been doing it. And I see it, I watch it, I talk to people, and what I find is most people are really looking for freedom of choice.
Right.
And that's my why, right? I want freedom of choice. If I want to sleep in, I'm going to sleep in. If I want to get up, I want to get up. And I'll work harder than anyone. I'll outwork anyone. But I want to be in control of that.
Right.
And so you're going to make a transition. You're saying this is your last year, right? So what happens, you know, you've got a pretty good size group of people working for you now. Your wife works there. You've got some family members and you got others. What would happen? I mean, what's your vision going out? Right. So you're going out. You've already got a successful business that maybe can support you guys. What are you looking to do? What do you expect to happen? And then how are you going to get there?
And I'm just going to go backwards for a second. But for the another one of the whys, I guess I hadn't really thought about it. But as far as my why, I think that one of my strongest driving forces now that when I'm thinking about it, as you were talking, is that I've never been in a position where, as a teacher, that my pay, my compensation was commensurate with what I did. It was always, you know, I make the same amount of money as somebody who sits on their butt at their desk and gives a kid a handout every day when they walk in the door. And that's, I think, one of the main allures for me of the entrepreneurial life is that, like you said, I'll work as hard as anybody. And I have to, when I make that leap, that's something that is appealing to me. It's not scary to me because I know
so
I'll
it's,
work hard.
So it's commensurate with your effort is the reward, right? You get the reward for your effort.
Right.
You get recognized with little Benjamins, right?
Every
time you put a little more effort in. And if you choose not to, and you know, I've talked to a lot of sellers. I know you listen to some of the podcasts. I've talked to a lot of sellers that have intentionally pulled back their business because they wanted to adjust their life. I always love Darla Flack's line. Hey, my business has this much of my life. My family is this much. My kids are this much, blah, blah, blah. If something needs adjusting, it's my business that I'll adjust.
Right.
And that's it, because the others are absolutes for me.
Yeah.
I just love that philosophy because you get to choose, right?
Right.
Like you say, you want to work harder and make more money? You can do it.
Yeah.
You want to – if you're content where you're at and you want to make more margin, you can change, right?
Right.
And I think that's
absolutely
a very cool and as we were talking about offline before we started, where have you seen a business where you can work part-time and have the success you have?
Right. Absolutely.
I just don't know of one,
no.
Gary. I really don't.
No,
as I look out there, I just can't see anything else. You know, I look at the real estate world where people are selling real estate, and they're putting in a zillion hours for, you know, not a lot of return. And here, you know, you've really built a very good business in a part-time world. So I'm interested now to hear you going forward.
Yeah.
What's going to happen next year when you wake up January 1st or whatever, you know, I guess school year
June
ends
1st
June 1st.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
June 1st, Gary gets up out of bed. What's going to happen? What's different? All right. I didn't take a natural break here. So I'm just going to insert this in and lead us right into our sponsor today. But, you know, I just think, again, when you listen to Gary and what he was able to achieve in a part-time world, can't wait to see how well he's going to do when he's full-time. But he's taking a lifestyle approach to it. Take the lessons, train others, and take that lifestyle approach. Well, let's get into our sponsor. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. Okay, we're going to get back into the podcast. In this last segment, Gary really gets into some details about his business and more importantly, how he has people sourcing for him, his commission plans that he pays or hourly, but every single person takes advantage of the commission plan. And now think about it, and he's paying 10%. He'll tell you that. So you need to add 10% in your model. If you could acquire goods at a good price, that even an extra 10% would still make you money, and you have 7 times the volume of what you can do, would you do that? And the answer is going to be yes. And Gary's going to tell you how in this segment. Let's get back into the podcast. June 1st, Gary gets up out of bed. What's going to happen? What's different?
Well, for me, what's different is going to be I'm going to be working on the business all day instead of, you know, part of the time. You know, at school, I can take some time on my breaks to work on the business, but it's kind of going to be a continuation of what I do during my summer break and during my 2-week breaks for spring break and Christmas break, where I pretty much dive headfirst into the business. And that's where we've been able to, you know, help the business grow, or those breaks there.
Well, that's a good. That brings a great question. So you've already had a trial run at this,
right?
And even think about that. I mean, you're right. I mean, that's just my teachers. I remember in high school, they always painted in the summer.
Yeah.
I always remember there was painters for whatever reason. Yep. Painting always seems to get. But so you've been able to do this. Tell us about that. So what happens to your business when you're able in June normally? Right? Have you've had experience with this?
Sure.
What are you able to do differently? What changes in the business when you're there?
Because we're just able to be out there more and buying more and, you know, taking advantage of opportunities that present themselves more efficiently, we're able to usually our July and August, because we're buying more heavily in June and July, are typically about double what our normal months are. You know, the January through June months of the year are, and then they kind of start tapering off as I go back to school, and
right.
they just pick up when Christmas hits. But
so you're hoping for this wave to continue,
right,
now, right?
Exactly.
So you just keep building and building and float and building and building.
Right.
That's really interesting.
And we just, like I said, you know, I told you off air, we added this team that we talked about, and we've been able to grow even more with them, and they're just kind of pretty new, actually. We brought them on in August, and you know, they're growing into, you know, their roles, and they've kind of each got their own niches that they are good at and things that they like to source, and we're, you know, tweaking things as we go, so we're getting better at it. So by the time June rolls around, they'll have been with me for almost a year. And
well, can we talk about some of them?
Sure.
I mean, so you have part-time people, a lot of part-time people,
yeah,
working for you now.
Yep.
And so, you know, your vision is to, like you say, kind of build them up. You spend a year with them. Hopefully they make it. If they don't, they deselect themselves. That's okay too, right?
Right.
And by a year from now, would you expect to make them full-time? I mean, is that hopeful?
I don't know if any of them want to be full-time.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, I don't think that's their goal. The one lady has her own cleaning that she does on the side, house cleaning. One lady is a pastor's wife, and she wants to be able to go to her kid's school when she needs to, or, you know, to volunteer or whatever. The other lady is a stay-at-home mom as well with her little girl, and she goes to daycare a couple days a week, and that's when she does her shopping. They just took a family vacation down to Florida, and were able to write some of it off because they went to Legoland and bought about 50 Halloween Lego sets for me.
Oh, that's awesome. And so they're buying, that whole group you just described, they're out buying.
Yeah, I've got four of them part-time buying, yeah.
Okay, and they have niches. So you know, there's, and I'll make them up the niche, it's my own, right? There's somebody in Legos or toys, and there's somebody in shoes, and there's somebody in,
it's probably,
you know,
more of that, it's more stores. You know, one place is really heavy into TJ Maxx and Marshalls and Home Goods. She'll spend $5,000 a week in the 10 different stores we have around Indy. Goes outside of Indy to those types of stores. The other girl loves to go to the discount Big Lots and Ollie's and things like that. And the other one's a Target and, you know, the Meijer, which is a local chain grocery store around here. So it's, everybody's kind of got their stores. One girl hates Walmart. The other girl loves going to Walmart. It's, everybody's got their preferences as sourcers anyway, amongst all of us. And, you know, they're no different. So I'm kind of learning where their strengths are and what they like. And we just kind of let them go in those directions.
And are they scanning?
Yeah, they are. We kind of use them as runners too, to start for the most part. But then, mm-hmm. you know, as they get comfortable with ranks, and they do a lot of texting me at the beginning, I give them a sheet that has guidance. We give them some direction up front. But
and I always, the direction would be what? Like, you know, this is the rank.
Yeah.
This is the minimum return. This is the minimum dollar amount.
Rank sheet, and I tell them, here's the, at this rank, you know, pretty much buy all of them. Don't worry about calling me or emailing me or texting me. At these, as the rank gets up there and as the competition gets higher, I want a higher and higher return or buy less and less. So they get a feel for it as they go along, and they get that rank spreadsheet, and on the rank spreadsheet that I give them has some written instructions as well that kind of explains our buying philosophy. But we also take them to the warehouse, and I just kind of bring them to one of our tables where I have products laid out. And I just go through the products and explain the process of why we bought the products and why we bought how many of those products, you know, the number that we did, just to kind of give them an experience with that. And they all, except for the one guy, they all the buyers also work in the warehouse shipping too. And that helps them to build their knowledge of other products that they might not notice on their own.
Right.
Which was one of my goals, to have them shipping as well as shop.
That's really smart. I mean, I've not heard anybody say that before. So because they're seeing what you bought or they're seeing what Joe bought,
right.
They, through osmosis, are picking up, hey, I never thought about that. I never would have went to that section of the store.
Right.
TJ Maxx also sells those, right, or what have
yep.
you. Now, does that also help for the sticker removal and stuff like that, especially like from a place like that? They now say, oh, that sucks. I'm not buying that again, right?
Yeah.
And that,
We've had one girl buying a lot of gift sets lately that need to be like boxed in special boxes. So I'm going to have a talk with them because they're good profit, but I'm going to ask them, you know, pretend you have to be the one prepping this. Are you going to want to prep this product?
You give them your credit card?
Some of them use their own. I'm actually going to go at the beginning of the year. I'm not going to change it now just because it's Q4, but at the beginning of the year, I'm going to move to a system where they all have one of my credit cards. Because it just keeps everything simpler for accounting and returns and things like that. It's just easier. Right now, my two biggest buyers actually like using their own cards. So I'm going to have to.
For the points, right? I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, they get rewards. And, you know, the one girl's probably spending upwards of $15,000 to $20,000 a month, depending on how much time she puts in. But she does an average of 4,000 or so a week, I would say, in buying. So for her, you know, if she can spend 15,000 and get 2% back in points, that's $300 just in travel points that she's getting.
Well, I'm sure it's not all rainbows and unicorns, right? I'm sure there's some horror stories too. How do you handle when Steve makes the bad buy and I bought a lot of them? Is it off with my head?
We return them. That's what I tell them. I tell them, don't worry about making a mistake. If I'm not available and I can't tell you, hey, buy this or don't buy this. We've had some issues. I don't know if everybody else has experienced this probably too, but you know, sometimes a lot of products have been coming up lately with subcategory ranks when you scan them with the scanning apps. And so we've had some instances where they've bought, you know, not a ton, but they bought some of an item that had like a 2000 rank and they bought like 10 or 20 of them. And, you know, we had to have them go back because it was a subcategory rank and they were like selling one a month. So it was, you know, that, I tell them, don't be nervous. I said, the worst thing that can happen is we return the products and you learn from it. So
yeah, it's a teachable moment, yeah, again, exactly. And it's your education, and it's probably your level of patience, right? You're more patient than, I mean, you're dealing with teenagers. So,
right.
You know, dealing with a couple buyers who are a little nervous. I'm sure they're nervous in the beginning, right? And so how far out do you reach from your base?
Geographically?
Yeah.
Right now, we probably go around the outskirts of Indianapolis, probably about half an hour.
They have a mapping system?
We communicate with the WhatsApp system, okay, on the phone, and they kind of tell each other where they're going. Like, hey, I've been to this target, and this target, don't go there. Or I've been, and they'll ask each other, hey, who's been to the Big Lots? And, you know, they kind of coordinate that themselves. They're all friends, which helps.
Okay.
They know each other. And so they kind of, they help each other. They each share things that they've found so other people can go find them. And it's actually a pretty cool system.
What percentage of your inventory then is coming from retail art?
Between retail and online, 100%.
Well, yeah, online, so I understand. Online. You own a sourcing service, which we'll talk about that in a minute. But, I mean, outside of that.
I don't know. We're probably – I have to look at the numbers, but I would guesstimate it's probably around 60 to 65% retail.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And so you're putting out a lot of cash every week with a decent return, right, as long as you control that. Let me ask you the other uncomfortable question. How do you pay him? And I know everybody out there is thinking the exact same thing. Steve, you better ask how he pays him. And I've had a bunch of people talk exactly how they pay, and there's a lot of different models, sure. And I'm interested to hear of yours.
Yeah, we're actually Melanie James and I are going to be coming out with a course in the beginning of the year after Q4. We're going to start working on it a little bit more about building a team, and then one of the biggest topics that everybody always wants to know about when we talk about it is how do you pay your people and everything. And we pay $10 an hour or 10% of what they buy of qualified products that meet our.
Yeah, I love the percentage because that, I mean, if somebody wants an unlimited sales plan, right?
Yep.
It's that's a commission only, right? That's
yep.
always the best way to go. If you're in sales, that's always
that's
the
right.
best way. So it's $10 an hour, period, with no bonus, no nothing, or they could do 10% of what they buy.
Right.
And so, because you're figuring that, you know, if they're not bringing in enough, you have to have that uncomfortable conversation, which I'm assuming you've had to have with some people saying, Steve, pick it up. Let's go. You're going to have to buy more.
You know, I really don't care because there's so many of them buying. I've not had too many issues with them not finding products. I've given them a lot of tips, you know, from things that I buy. So that's kind of given them a little bit of an advanced learning or shorten their learning curve a little bit because, you know, they know, you know, the kinds of things to be looking for. But I'll tell you what, they find some stuff that I've never even looked at. And I've been doing this for 4 years. So, I mean, one of my girls found this generic looking doll from Afghanistan that sold like crazy at our local Meijer grocery store. I think it was Meijer. I had to walk by those things all day long and she, you know, picked it up and it drew her attention. She's got little girls. We have no kids. So it was not something that would draw my attention, but she is they're doing a Ugandan adoption and everything. So they're very aware of, you know, multicultural issues and things like that. So it's opened up my eyes to a lot of different products as well. But yeah, I've not really had that issue with them not having a lot of success. They've been pretty good. And, you know, if they have a bad day one day, they know that it's a kind of a game of averages. We talk about that. How, you know, you might find $1,000 worth of stuff in an hour one day, and then tomorrow you might strike out, but, you know, you spent 2 hours and struck out, but you spent an hour and made $100 the day before. So that averages out to a pretty good hourly wage.
So how many hours, are they there? I know some of them are extremely part-time. I mean, any average, any guess?
Yeah, I don't know what the hours are because they all are on the percentage.
Commission only?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a smart move. I mean, it's ultimately for them, it's a smart move. And it's a smart move for you because you know you're fixed. You can add that right into your model.
Right.
It's a very simple model. Add another 10% plus payroll tax or whatever.
And I pay them more than $10 an hour. I know I do. I know my top shopper makes about $16 an hour on average.
Okay.
But she also lists for me. She'll buy stuff. Like, she's a big bra shopper, which is something I've never in my life bought I just wouldn't do it. It's just awkward for me. I know there's some sellers that don't have any problem doing it. Some guys,
John Grello.
I know. And you know, Bob Wiley. I mean, it's just, I just don't.
Yeah. Bob Wiley. Yep. He's always talking about.
I can't do it, but, I don't have the patience for it, first of all. And then it's just embarrassing, but, she will do it all day long. And she takes them home, takes the baby clothes home and all that stuff that she sources, and lists it all too. We taught her how to use Inventory Lab, and you know, she does all the listing of the stuff that she buys as well. And, so that's worked out really well for us. And that's a $10 an hour position flat. There's not, you know, there's when you're listing or working in the warehouse with us, that's a $10 an hour flat.
And so do they start in the warehouse and work their way out into the field or vice versa?
But all of them have pretty much started right in with the shopping. And then once they started buying stuff, they just kind of jumped in and they dropped it off and then came the next day to help ship it. And that was,
well, it's ultimately the best return, right? I mean, if they're out there buying, right, that's where the money is made, right?
Right.
When you're buying, right? Not packing it in a box. Yep. I mean, ultimately getting it out of the place. Do you have to carry, because you're doing such a volume, right? You're doing a large volume of retail. Are you carrying inventory in your warehouse at any given time, or is it pretty much turning week in and week out?
Yeah, we don't carry very much in the warehouse at all.
That's great. Yeah. That's really great. That says something when you're able to turn it that quickly, especially the volume that you're talking about. Where did your leadership skills to be able to manage a pretty complicated – I mean, it's complicated, Gary. I mean, yeah. It really is. You might not think of it being complicated, but what you're describing is, A, you're the HR manager, right, or the hiring manager, or you or your wife.
Right.
You've got payroll. You've got accounting things to do. You've got distribution, I guess is the right phrase, you know, putting boxes together and that kind of thing. And then you got this sales team out there, you know, you're trying to pump them up, trying to get them motivated. Where'd that leadership skill come from?
You know, I think, you know, being a teacher, I think you kind of build that up. It wasn't something that came natural for me. It was, you know, something I think over the years, just leading kids, you know, through various projects, through various classes. It's just a skill that has developed. And then doing this business for 3.5, almost 4 years before I actually tried to bring them on, I think helped. Because I knew exactly what I wanted them to do, and it gave me a clearer picture. I think that's one of the things that people sometimes they miss out on, they make a mistake with. They try to bring on help before they really know what they're doing. You know,
they don't know what to expect. Are you looking for perfection? Greg Murphy has a pretty good sized company, and he always says, Steve, if I can get 80%, because I only give 80%. You know, I could love to tell you I give 100%, but I'm not always on. Right.
Right.
I mean. What, you know, should, I mean, because I'm sitting here thinking, what we want to do is we want to try to transfer this knowledge over to somebody who's stuck at $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month, right?
Right.
And they want to get to that next place. They know they can't do it on their own. They know they need some help, but maybe they don't have that leadership. They're not teachers. They haven't been dealing with kids. And so can you talk a little bit about what your expectations are? I mean, is it perfection?
You know, I think at the beginning, if you're somebody at that level looking to bring somebody on and you don't know 100% what you want to do, I think the way to do that and to get perfection, to ease them into it and to ease yourself into it, is to just use them as runners, or start them out in the warehouse helping you pack and prep so they can kind of learn, you know, one, the process of listing and everything, and also you can teach them at the same time, you know, here's what we're buying and here's why we're buying it. So they can kind of learn your buying philosophy. Everybody's got their own ROI requirements and own rank requirements and everything. But, you know, so yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody can expect perfection once you let them loose. In fact, I was talking to a coaching client just yesterday about that. You have to be willing to give them some leash to make mistakes, or they're going to be just hamstrung by fear of making mistakes.
Right. They're robots,
right.
And they're not going to perform to the level you need. Right.
Right. They always have freedom. I mean, they'll buy six of something that I would buy three of. Okay. That's okay with me because yeah, I might have it. You know, when I was 2 years into this, that might not have been okay because money was tighter. So you might want to get a tighter handle on it and just use them as runners until you feel comfortable with, okay, I'm okay if they spend a little more or buy a few more of this item than I intended them to. But, and the worst case scenario again is return three of them if they make that mistake. I mean, it's not the end of the world.
And your runner term, you mean, hey, go buy this particular style diaper.
Yep.
Yeah, here's my list. Go buy these diapers. They're at Target. They're up on the end, blah, 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 this UPC, and buy six only,
right?
Yep. Or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's very specific. And so, you know, again, if you – you know, one of the limits of retail ARP is, especially when you're in an area where you don't have 10 targets, is, you know, you're getting onesies, twosies. And so if you have two targets, you're getting four in that scenario, right? But if you have 10, you're getting, you know, multiples. You can get 20 of them.
Right.
And so there's a benefit to that in saying, all right, just go pick up these six things, period, but go to all 10 stores. Now, do you run into or have they run into trouble from the stores because they're buying larger quantities and the frequency that they go to those stores? I mean, you go to Walmart, they'll take anybody and they want you to come back, right? But, you know, I'm told, and I'm not running into this myself, that Target has some difficulties or Kohl's. I've not run into either of those problems at those stores, but my approach is probably a little different. It's not so – I'm kind of a quiet shopper, right?
Yeah. No. The answer, short answer is no. We just – I've not had any issues with any store – one manager ever in 4 years gave me a trouble with my tax exempt form. It was Meijer grocery store, because it didn't have the exact, on our tax exempt forms in Indiana, we have to write exactly what kind of products we're buying. Well, I hadn't written electronics on there and they had clearance electronics and he would not accept my tax exempt form. So we had to pay tax on it. He still let us buy it. But as far as quantity limits or anything, I've not had any issues. In fact, they typically love us, you know, when we come in and help us clear the shelf or ask us if we want more from the back. I know, like I said, my one girl who shops, she has her little niche in certain areas. She goes to Carter's. I've never in my life been into a Carter's store, and she goes there and buys $1,000 worth of stuff that's on discount, and she gets a coupon that she gets in the mail to use with it. And the manager now will call her and let her know, hey, we got a good sale coming up or whatever. And so, yeah, we've not had that issue. I'm sure different areas are different. You know, it's a lot to do with the personality of individual managers, but from us, I don't think store wide nationally that there's an issue with any retail store. I think it's, you know, a lot of it's in the way you present yourself.
Well, I agree. And that's what I was going to say is that, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about this and I think about many Lipsick talking about how he used to be in retail so he can speak the language,
right?
And it is about relationships. But, you know, I know you know how charming and witty I am, right? I mean, it's interesting to think that I'm the only one that can make a good relationship. It's kind of stupid, egotistical on my part to think that I'm the only one that can have a good relationship with that manager. What you're here to tell us, and I think this is a big moment, is that your six sourcers also have been able to develop those relationships.
Definitely.
Matter of fact, that means seven of you have been able to think of how much more territory you've been able to cover.
Right.
And I think that's a big moment for people to accept that it doesn't have to be them having the relationship. If you've treated your employee fairly and you're open and honest with them, that's a big benefit. I think that's a very cool thing to say. I don't think people have thought of it because I think they have to have the relationship. They have to be the one. You don't have to be.
No.
And you're proof of that.
Yeah.
So that's very cool.
Yeah, I think it's part of it's in the hiring process too. And I'm just got done listening to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership, and he talked in there a lot about hiring practices, and I broke like a lot of the rules, but fortunately I knew these people, and you know, they're all very nice people, you know, very kind hearted. They're not people who are going to be, you know, bulls in china shops and leave shelves a mess and things like that. So they're people who you could imagine would build those relationships with managers and not have any kinds of problems.
Well, answer this question. So you have six people out there. Why are they not – and some of them are using their own money.
Right.
Why are they not just opening up their own Amazon businesses?
They don't want to. I know that's a
– And why? Why? Specifically, what's the reason?
One of the biggest fears that people have is that they're going to start their own businesses, but we don't have any non-compete clauses that they have to sign or anything. Rachel is one of my biggest shoppers. She's just flat out told me she doesn't want the hassle of running a business.
And it is a hassle.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. And she likes the flexibility. She can come and go. She doesn't have to worry about when stuff sells or whatever. She's extremely invested in my business, and she really takes pride in, you know, buying good stuff, finding good stuff, and providing that for us. And, you know, we take good care of our people. You know, we're going to be doing quarterly bonuses at the end of the year this year. And, you know, if they see stuff that they like, we take care of them with that too. And that's if it's sitting in the warehouse and they want it. So we take care of them and they take care of us. And, you know, I'm trying to think of the other state. They just are all looking for a little extra money. They're not, one of them's not in a position financially. Two of them are not in a position financially to fund their own business if they wanted to. They both really kind of need the money to keep coming in order to support their households. And then the other one is just kind of doing it for fun money. She's not a businesswoman. She's just in it to earn a little extra cash. I think again, it's part of the hiring process. And, you know, if people do that, I mean, I guess I'm comfortable with it, because if they decided to do that, I know that I've got a team who could smoke them. I mean, locally, and there's always online, and I've not done, you know, much wholesale. We just started private label, but there's always other areas, other ways of making money. There's tons more products. I learn new product lines every week. You know,
well, especially as you have seven people bringing product into the warehouse, right, and you're teaching each other. I mean, I think that's one of the best stories, and I love exactly what you're saying, is that, you know, if they can earn an extra $1,000 to $1,500 a month, that's what most people are looking for. They're not looking for the $300,000 job. Right. I mean, everybody says they want it, but nobody really wants the responsibility that goes with it, right?
Right.
And so I think it's a great example of what's potential, I just think it's really great. So you also do coaching, right? You're a Jim Cockrum coach, correct?
Yes.
And you've been with him for a while.
Yeah, probably 2.5 years now. A little over 2 years.
And what's your specialty? What do you coach?
We focus. I have a team, so I have a lady under me who focuses a lot on wholesale. And she's really good with social media marketing and the bundling and keywords and stuff like that. And I focus primarily on, you know, business building, you know, projecting, you know, taking your available money and kind of projecting, you know, where your business can be based on, you know, how much you have to spend and really, you know, deciding how quickly your business realistically can grow, kind of helping them with that, helping them set up the you know, the details of the business, and then getting the ARB, the online and the retail going. That's where the ones that I work, if they're working with me, that's their interest. And there's a heavy interest lately, especially after the online arbitrage course came out in, you know, doing stuff online. So that's probably the online stuff is probably 80% of what I focus on with my coaching clients, with a little bit of retail mixed in.
And you learn something, too, every time you coach, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so I think about that a lot, that some people are natural coaches, and they ought to do it if they want to learn faster.
Sure.
Because they will – when you teach others, you learn. Every single time – every time I talk to somebody smarter than me, and every conversation I've had on my podcast has been with somebody who knows a lot more than me, they're smarter than me, or what have you, I learn so much.
Sure.
And I sit there, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, it just expands my thought process. So you also are involved with Greg Purdy – in a side business, and talk about that. Where did that come from? How's it work? And what's going on with that?
You know, we were both kind of working on a site to offer kind of just resources to sellers. And I kind of had an Angie's List kind of site in mind, where people could, you know, post, you know, different services that they've used with. And you know, leave reviews so people would have, because there's always these questions in these groups, you know, what's the best, you know, place to get this? What's the best printer to get? What prep company should I use? And all these things. And I just kind of wanted a place for people to go to have those questions answered, instead of, you know, constantly having to answer the same question over and over again. Kind of an extension of what I do with coaching is, you know, we get the same stuff over and over again, obviously, because people are starting from scratch most of the time. And so we just create videos and resource pages. And instead of having to recreate stuff, we do that. So that was kind of the idea. And Greg kind of was working on the same thing at the same time. And we just kind of came together and realized that we were doing that. And it was kind of silly to work on it separately. So we came up with sellersessentials.com, and we basically have created a site where we provide resources for sellers, not just Amazon sellers, but there, and it's in development. You know, it's not, you know, fully developed out yet, but you know, we're going to have a book selling section. We've got a book selling calendar in there. So if you're into book sales, I know, you know, Greg and Brian just launched their new book course. If you're looking for places to, you know, get book sales and figure out when they're going to be happening around you, we've got a great calendar on there that you can go to for that. We've got a section on wholesale and liquidation, a section on arbitrage, obviously for Amazon. And then there's going to be an eBay section eventually. So we're just developing it as a kind of a one-stop shop for e-commerce sellers, to, you know, find, okay, here's the printer that we would recommend. Here's the stuff we would recommend to take your stickers off. Everything from little things like that to there's a whole page dedicated to just all the different prep centers or the, you know, prep services out there. So just a kind of a one-stop shop with all the services that we would need as online sellers. And we just kind of keep adding to it to make it more valuable.
It's really grown. I mean, I've been nosing around it. I was involved in the discussions way early on with Greg, just what you guys were doing, and it's really expanded, and it's really become rich. I know Jeremy's done a really good job with the site. It's clean. It's really really looks great. You also have a source list.
Yeah.
Seller essential source list, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
What is
it? I had used lists since almost the first month that I started, just as a supplement to what I was doing on my own to kind of teach myself, you know, okay, these are some areas I would learn great sources and great types of products. It wasn't even as much about buying the exact products off the list, as much as it was about learning different sources online and different types of products. I mean, one of the biggest products we bought at the beginning was a bunch of baby bottles that I would have never, ever looked at had I not been on that list. So we kind of saw the value in lists for that. And we wanted to provide a kind of a different service that combined some of the best of both worlds. We've been part of different lists, he and I both. And we just kind of wanted to provide something that got rid of the stuff we didn't like and added some additional value. So what we basically did is we have this daily list, and we go through, we have some VAs, about 10 VAs that are sourcing every day for us. And we also add our own content as well. But we sift through it, the three of us, at least two of the three of us every day, depending on the day, we'll sift through it. And we kind of go through with a fine tooth comb, make sure the best coupon codes are in there, make sure that it's, you know, the ROI is right, make sure the keeper chart isn't deceptive and it's really just sold one time ever and now it's got a good sales rank. So, you know, we go through that and kind of filter all the deals out for people. So, you know, we get a lot of lists that we've been on that, you know, you just get these things and you look at them, you look at the keeper chart and it's like, this is not a really a good deal. It may look like it just if you look at the rank today only, but we do the rank and then we do the 90-day average rank as well. So you get a more complete picture of what the product's performance has been like. So we go through really, and with our seller experience, seller's eyes, we critique each and every product, and we only put stuff on the list that we would buy ourselves. And then we have a Facebook group that complements that, where we, you know, people can ask questions about stuff that was on the list. We can, you know, people post additional coupon codes that, you know, that they found that we didn't even know about. And we post additional deals in there as well. In fact, one of the best deals so far, people have said they've paid for a whole year's worth of the membership with one product that we posted in the Facebook group alone. So, you know, probably two products that we posted in there have made people a lot of money, not even including the stuff that was on the list. So the Facebook groups are really, I think it's a really nice thing because they get a chance to interact with us. They get a chance to ask questions and get clarification about why we thought a deal was a good deal. And, you know, it's not something that you get with any list that I know of, honestly.
Well, it also, and they'll call you out. I've seen them call you out because I'm a member of the group.
Yeah.
And I've seen them call you out and saying, hey, wait, that doesn't match that picture.
That went out perfect, definitely.
No, and you, wait, you're right. Let me make this right. Let me fix it. Let me do this. And I've seen that, and I appreciate that because I think, you know, as you say, you know, you're using people that are sourcing from around the world. It's not as easy as, and it's not easy for us, right? I mean, we've all done that, bought something at the store, come home, and realize it's not the same ASIN, and you say, oh, what do I do? Well, that happens, right?
Right.
And so you guys are man enough to say, hey, you're right. Let's fix it and make it right. And so to be in the Facebook group, you only get in there when you're a member of the paid list. How much does the list cost, Gary?
It's $149 a month. It's essentialdailydeals.com. And like I said, you get the at least 10 deals a day. That's the minimum. I think we've had 10 deals one day since we've had the list. And that doesn't count the stuff that we put in the Facebook group as well. But most, I would say about 80% of the deals that we post on the list are in the top 1% of their respective categories, which I think is another thing that sets our list apart from other lists. We don't have, you know, things that are in the top 5%, top 3%. I don't think we've ever had anything, you know, above the top 2% ever in our list. So it's, like I said, most of the stuff is well above, well under the top 1% in each individual category that we list in. And we list in all, ungated categories. So anybody, you know, from brand new to experienced can be a member. We will post some gated category, deals in the Facebook group, in case, you know, some people are ungated and can take advantage of them. We don't want them to just, we don't want to keep those to ourselves and not have members who are able to take advantage of those, miss out. But you know, we do post some RA deals as well in there. We know some of our subscribers are international and they can't take advantage of it. But, you know, some of our international members may have runners in the States. You know, that's, you know, we know Barrington has talked about how he's used a runner in Florida before. People can use runners. It doesn't have to be somebody locally. Like I have, my runners are all local, but one of our next steps, and you asked about that earlier and we didn't get into it at all, but one of my next steps is to branch out to hiring people in other areas nearby. And we can, you know, so Cincinnati's like 2 hours away and Columbus, Ohio is a couple hours away and, you know, Chicago's a few hours away. So
I think that's a great point, right? So the people who say I'm in a rural area, I see that a lot. I'm in a rural area. There's only one Walmart within, you know, 2 hour drive,
right?
And that's true, right? In some places. So what you're saying is, hey, with the right training, with the right skill set, you can train somebody 3 hours away from you, to, you know, buy, prep, pack, and ship, list and ship for you from that other place. You're the funder, right?
Yep.
You're paying the money. And again, why would they want to do that? You've already explained that. They don't want the responsibility of having a job
right.
or having a business and all the tax stuff and all the legal stuff and all the rest of that jazz.
Right.
I just think it's a neat concept that I've not heard a lot of people talking about. And I think it's really would be really neat if you can make that work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's I have no doubt that we can make it work. It's just going to be the logistics of it, you know, finding the right person in each area and making it work. We just did a tour. We just did a run through of Louisville and Cincinnati. We went down to southern Indiana. There's a little refuge, a wildlife refuge, and they have baby tigers down there, and you get to go in and play with them and stuff. So while we were down there, we just did a sweep of Louisville and then came up to Cincinnati before we came home. So I know there's tons of potential in other areas as well. So there's no reason to limit yourself to just where you live, whether it's rural or whether there's tons of shopping. There's tons of opportunity elsewhere too. And you know what? I know there's other shoppers in Louisville who went to the stores that I went to probably that week. And, you know, they probably found stuff and then I found stuff that they didn't notice. So just because other people shop there doesn't mean, you know, that you're not going to find stuff or your shoppers aren't going to find stuff there.
Well, and so you did a little travel, Tosh. Do you see that coming up in the future for yourself and your wife? I mean, just to take advantage of the freedom?
You know, I can see us doing it a little bit, like long weekends. She likes to go. There's some state parks in Indiana that she likes. And, you know, one of it's up in Amish country. So we like to go up there. I could see us doing some trips up there and doing that. But as far as like getting the trailer and hooking it up and going for these week long trips or 2 week long trips as some people do. I'm not sure that that's something that we'll get into. That's why I would hire somebody to do it for me in areas that I might, you know, other people might drive those 2 hours to get someplace and then stay there for a couple of days. I'll just find somebody to do it for me in that area and then drive an hour to meet him halfway or let him come 2 hours and pay him the hourly rate to come drive it to me, you know, once a week or whatever. So I'd rather do it that way than spend all my time on the road. That's one of the things I don't like about my job now is I'm driving an hour each way every day.
Yeah, and I'm not a good person behind. I don't like to drive either. I interviewed Scott Zilke, and he spent 26 days on the road.
Oh.
It's an incredible – now, last week his wife came with him. So, you know, they were together for the last week on their way back to their home.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's brutal.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is
just brutal. And, you know, I mean, he had an amazing process. He had incredible success and you know,
sure.
His sales were huge.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I did also interview Chris Bond, who
yep.
has an amazing story. You know, it's a lifestyle for him,
right.
You know, and he's really taken and built a real great lifestyle around it. But it's to each his own. But, you know, maybe that's another great way to end this is that there are a myriad of ways to attack this, right?
Oh,
there's
yeah.
really no one way. You've got to find what works for you, again, related to your why,
right?
If freedom is your answer, you know, being on the road for 26 days might not be the best solution,
right?
Because that's not freedom, because you're, oh, I got to go. Going for weekend trips, hey, let's go to the Amish country this weekend, yep, and go up and find some products and that kind of
right.
thing. All right, Gary. So you recommended earlier Entree Leadership, and it's a great book. I read the book. I didn't listen to it. Any other good books that you think our listeners would benefit from?
I love The 4-Hour Work Week.
Okay, that's a good one.
Last year just kind of gives you – I mean, I think that maybe 4 hours is a little bit unrealistic, but I like the concepts behind it of outsourcing, which is, you know, kind of what we're doing. I mean, I could literally not source all week, and we'd still have plenty of inventory to keep us going, even if I bought nothing during the week. So that's nice, and that's a change that that we've made in the business in the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. So we try to build into some of those principles. Trying to think off the top.
So you're working on your business, right?
Right.
Not in your
exactly.
business. So, you know, now I'm drawing a blank on the book. Oh my gosh. E-Myth.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I read
E-Myth
that
by
time.
Gerber. Yeah. Have you ever read that one?
Yeah. E-Myth and E-Myth Revisited. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great book, and for exactly that thing where they talk about work on your business, not in your business, right?
Right?
Work on the process. And it sounds like you've really gotten a good process. How big is your warehouse?
We rent space at a local facility. It's 1,000 square feet, just enough to, you know, get stuff in, get stuff processed, get it out.
Okay, so you're not hanging out there
yeah.
and having cocktail parties
yep.
and stuff. It's
yep.
in and out, boom, and move on.
Yep. Yeah, and Ryan Rieger actually rents some space. He's down in Texas, but he's from Pendleton, not too far from me, and he actually rents some space in the same warehouse.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. It's a smaller world,
yeah.
right? Again, you can do it anywhere. You don't have to be there, right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so you you've given us some great information, and I think some real actionable information, and I think what I really appreciate about the interview is you have brought up things that I haven't thought of and I haven't heard a lot of people talking about, and the value of having those part-time people and their perspective, bringing them in the warehouse to get them used to other products. I mean, there's just some really great golden nuggets in there, and I'll include those. I'll break them out because I just think there's some real value there for readers or listeners. But what else? I'm looking for a tip or a trick, right? So the goal is to take people past stuck, right? Because everybody gets stuck at some
sure.
point. You might get stuck at 10,000, 15,000, 30,000. I always say that, you know, 30,000, you're starting to get to a number where you can make a decent living.
Right.
You know, at least in my math and my experience. And so, but they're stuck and they want to get a little bit further. Give us one tip or trick that they can put into their business right away that they can start to see a result.
You know, I was thinking about this before, you know, I was looking at the notes and everything and trying to think of, you know, what do I do differently than that really kind of helps to push me over the edge. And, you know, it's just that I work not only hard, but I work efficiently. And I know there's nothing sexy about that or anything, you know, too exciting about that, but I'm really efficient in how I source. I mean, when I do retail arbitrage, especially, we take trips. We go visit my parents. We go visit my wife's parents. We go to a concert. Everywhere we go, we build sourcing into that experience, because time is money, and time is one of the biggest limiting factors when you're trying to grow this business and work a job at the same time. And I think that's what's allowed us. We don't try to, you know, set special trips up where we're going, you know, just to go sourcing. We build it into our life, and it becomes part of the lifestyle instead of just something else we're doing separately from the rest of our lives. So, you know, I wish I had
that's a good piece of advice, though, because you're saying, hey, I build that efficiency. So even when you go full time next year, I hope you maintain that efficiency. Otherwise, it could creep into every aspect of your life. Sure. And then you really didn't gain anything, right? Then you're just working a million hours. You don't want to work a million hours. You're looking to that 4-hour work week, right?
Exactly.
So I think that's great advice, and I think it's great actionable stuff. All right, best way to get in touch with you, Gary. What do you recommend? And now you have coaching, and I'll have links for all those things.
Yeah,
so
Facebook.
You tell me what you think
is
the best
way. I don't know how to make sure there's probably more than one Gary Baird on there, but
now I'll put a link right directly.
Okay.
Right on the podcast. If you come out to this episode, and you'll be able to link right through it. I'll have a link to Seller Essentials. I'll have a list to the Essential
Great.
Daily Deals too.
Yep.
And I think that you're open for coaching clients. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And you'll continue coaching. Do you think it'll expand when you do go full time?
Yeah, we're actually building out our team, so my role won't expand as far as how many hours I spend doing it. It's going to change as far as what I do. I take on about the same number of clients now, but we just, as a team, we take on more because I have coaches working under me as well.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean that will probably expand a little bit because I'll have more free time to work with. There's some clients right now that it's hard to schedule because of my teaching schedule, so they have to be available in the evening, and that doesn't work with some international clients, and you know, there's some limitations there.
It makes sense. I mean, I appreciate you taking the time of your busy schedule. I mean, let's face it, you're a busy guy. I mean, you got a lot going on, and I just appreciate you taking the time, because I think people will feel a little better about themselves knowing that they too can do it and have a big job and have a lot of responsibility, and yet they can still do it.
Sure.
And they can rely on others. And I just think that that's such a great story. So I really want to say thank you.
Oh,
and
you're welcome. My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. You have a great night.
You too. Thanks.
Man, I hope you enjoyed that podcast as much as I did. Gary is such a great guy. He's a real guy. He's approachable. I have links out on E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, episode 45, how you can get in touch with Gary, how you can get in touch with some of his services. He did mention to me that he also does private coaching. I have a link there for that. If you need help and you're looking to get to that next level, he might be the right guy for you. Hey, thanks for listening. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.